You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 26 May. Today in 1805, Napoleon Bonaparte was crowned King of Italy. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Fahima Adia, Momentum Securities. Pick and pay results. Lots there. Well, that's the big thing is that break even has been pushed out yet another year. It is Soji Solanki. He is from Absa CIB, Africa FinTech Market. We've had a couple of big-ish IPOs and new investments. Looking for some trends there. And then Fed Group. They got a 500 million rand funding from the IDC for renewable energy projects. Keen to dig into that. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Expectations grow for SA credit rating upgrades. This following Moody's rating upping its outlook on South Africa's fiscal position. And Business Day, SA's vehicle trade deficit with China and India hits 90 billion rand. Morning markets, US was closed yesterday, although we do have the futures trading around 0.75% higher this morning. The East is mostly red, Sydney down 0.6%, Tokyo just under 0.5% down. Hong Kong, the exception after being closed yesterday, is up 0.5%, and Tencent a little over 0.5% down. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 4,576. Brent, 97.91. Platinum, 1,964. Palladium, 1,406. The rand is 16.32. Bitcoin, 76,600. And top 40 opening call, red open, 320 points, or 0.3% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Fahima Adia from Momentum Securities. Fahima, the pick and pay results, this full year numbers. Of course, post these numbers, they did another sale of Boxer shares that got them 4 odd billion rand in cash. Your sense around the numbers? I mean, break even is seemingly getting longer and longer. The turnaround is proving tough.
Good morning, Simon. Good to be with you. Yes, so I thought this was an interesting one because last week, Thursday, we saw the initial trading statement guiding the full year results, and the market actually got quite excited. I mean, at one stage, the share price was up almost 14%. It noted an improvement in the headline loss position, excellent performance from Boxer that came in above expectations, reporting about 12% turnover growth. But then yesterday, once the full results were released, we did see it pull back down almost 5%. I think the market just got more color on the numbers and digested that and then actually realized that it wasn't as great as the trading statement seemed to guide. And the position of that core pick and pay business still isn't exactly where it needs to be. If you take a closer look at the group numbers, turnover increased 3.4%, but that was actually largely driven by Boxer because the core pick and pay business segment actually still saw a decline of 1.6%. The group trading profit fell 4.2%. The trading margin declined to 1.4%. And I think what was concerning is that the core pick and pay segment that they have been trying to turn around for such a long time is still not where it needs to be. It still has a long way to go. The trading loss there widened to 1 billion rand. So, look, I think it is important to note that there were some factors that impacted the result. There was a store reset program to dispose of some loss-making stores, so that did have an impact. If you look at the supermarket's like-for-like sales, it looked a bit more positive. They've introduced improved product ranges in fresh foods, cut back on wastage. They're trying to reduce the staff costs and so forth. But it doesn't seem like it's enough. Like you said, they've had to actually now delay the break-even target of that pick-and-pay segment from FY28 to FY29. And last week, like you said, we saw pick-and-pay have to dispose of a further 12% stake in its best-performing asset, Boxer, to just help turn around the struggling pick-and-pay segment. So one does really need to question whether there is value now in selling down your highest performing asset to actually invest in an underperforming legacy business, which is actually taking a lot longer to turn around.
It is taking, and it's a great point. I mean, Boxer was absolutely the star of the show. And if you're buying Pick and Pay, I mean, the numbers are basically saying you get Pick and Pay for free, essentially buying Boxer. Is that a fair strategy, or is it still just, if you like Boxer, buy Boxer? Don't go there. I mean, is it worth going the Pick and Pay route to try and get some cheap Boxer?
Yeah, it's exactly that, Simon, which is why I think people are seeing some value in Pick and Pay just because of that stake in Boxer. But yeah, you know, that stake in Boxer is worth more than the entire Pick and Pay group. And I think it's important. You're seeing that the market's assigning a negative value to the rest of that Pick and Pay business. And for me, you know, I don't think it's worth the risk of going through Pick and Pay because of the negative drag that core Pick and Pay business could have on the income coming from Boxer. I would rather just, you know, have a clear entry directly into Boxer as an investor.
Yeah, take your point. If you like Boxer, buy Boxer. Keep it nice and simple. Fima Adia, Momentum Securities, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. Pick and Pay, is the stock worth looking at? Is there potential? Are you buying it just for that Boxer? Or are the risks too high? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Adesoji Shalenke. He is head of fintech and banks investment banking origination at Absa CIB. Adesoji, appreciate the time. African fintech, I want to say on the rise. Maybe it's on the re-rise. We had two fintech listings last year, Optasia Local, Cash Plus in Morocco. Certainly, my sense is both showing sort of improved in potential, but also in investor appetite. It shows confidence in the sector, its ability to scale, its ability to create real liquidity events such as a listing. They were both big stories.
Yes, that's correct. First of all, thank you for having me on this discussion today. So yes, that's correct. Those two assets did come to public market in 2025. And essentially what you've seen is two scaled businesses that had previously been backed by private capital now exploring an exit for those investors. So one of the listings happened in South Africa, the GSE, and the other in Morocco. The other interesting thing you find is in terms of the nature of investors that came into both companies, it was a combination of domestic, retail, and institutional capital, but also international investors. I'll say significantly more international investor participation on the GSE listing. And on the Moroccan side, you know, relatively more participation on the domestic side, just given the nature of development of that market, as well. So just important differences to keep in mind. But the main thing here is that scaled opportunities are essentially finding exit routes via African capital markets. And that's a trend which is happening for large fintech companies, and long may it last.
Hey, agreed, long may it last. Are there potential, you know, more listings out there, or maybe other sort of corporate activity? I'm thinking maybe mergers and acquisitions and the like. I mean, these are unlikely to be isolated events.
That's correct. So certainly not isolated events. So if you take a step back, what you also just have to keep in mind is the quantum of capital that has been invested in African fintech companies over the last 10 years. The numbers we're talking about is north of $20 billion, right? So from that perspective, it's only natural to expect that there are certain scaled opportunities now, or should I say companies where entrepreneurs have built very successful businesses, profitable, growing, gaining market share. And it's only natural for the investors that have backed them for all of these years to consider an exit opportunity. So that's one theme. So from an exit perspective, yes, capital markets, but also M&A. And from the M&A, on the M&A perspective, that is certainly picking up as well. And South Africa, unsurprisingly, is leading the charts in terms of M&A activity in the fintech space in Africa. There's been significantly more activity where you're finding large incumbent players, whether it's in banking, retail, or even in the fintech space, actually acquiring other technology companies on the continent. There's also, to a limited extent, some cross-border activity, but this is still intra-Africa M&A. There's more limited international into Africa technology M&A deals happening. So key summary is that there's significantly more domestic in-country M&A happening to a more limited extent, intra-Africa M&A, and to a much smaller extent, international intra-Africa M&A. On the tech side.
Gotcha. And what are the main sectors within African fintech? I mean, my sense is payments, my sense is probably lending, but I mean, payments goes all the way back to the original, the sort of M-Pesa.
So correct. A combination of those two. So yes, payments, yes, credit. But the unique thing about Africa also is the nature of the business models that have been built within this segment are also quite unique and perhaps quite different from what you find in other developed markets. So that also just means that as an investor looking to get a deal done in Africa, you actually need to make sure you work with advisors that really understand the nuances of the business models that are quite unique in an African context. And that's one of the main areas where we spend a lot of our time guiding our clients. So, you know, there's just more nuances when it comes to Africa. You know, the number of countries, the variances in the business models. I mean, you've mentioned two big categories being payments and credit, but even underneath those two umbrellas, there's just so many unique business models that have been built, you know, within those categories. Mobile money is also another large segment as well, large, growing, profitable businesses. And I think for international investors, this is also an area where there's a lot of explaining that is perhaps required just to explain how unique these business models are in an African context.
I take your point around that. And I'm thinking, you know, the US, for example, there's PayPal, there's Venmo, but those are kind of like app-based, whereas we've got mobile money, we've got the M-Pesa, which was the USSD process around there. There's ultimately the same outcome, but a very different road of how we get there and how we've used sort of ingenuity to solve problems.
Yeah, and you've hit the nail on the head. And the reasons for those differences should not be surprising, because when you look at the developed markets you're talking about, like the United States, so smartphone penetration, banking penetration, ATM penetration, extremely high.
Yeah.
When you come to Africa, you know, the infrastructure for cash in, cash out is actually not ATMs. I mean, we do have ATMs, don't get me wrong, but, you know, the most scaled infrastructure for cash in, cash out is actually agent networks that are typically owned by either telecoms companies or financial technology companies, right? And the magnitude of difference in terms of number of ATMs per 100,000 adults in Africa, maybe it's like, you know, 4 to 5 ATMs for every 100,000 adults. For the agent network, I'm talking, you know, 20 to 30 agents for every 100,000 adults. So that's just a magnitude of difference when it comes to the cash in, cash out infrastructure that you find in Africa vis-a-vis, should I say for the agent network vis-a-vis the bank ATM infrastructure. So given what I've just described and how important it is when it comes to digital payments, you first of all need to be able to have the infrastructure to digitize cash.
Yeah.
And in Africa, that is largely being done by the mobile money agent network. But you're also finding out that how the customers then transact once money sits in that wallet has historically been very USSD based, also because there's just been more 2G and 3G phones in the hands of African consumers. But that is changing. Okay, and this is where the long-term growth trajectory of Africa is actually quite exciting, because as more people evolve from 2G and 3G USSD to more app-based models, there's just more digital transactions that also continues to happen as internet penetration continues to increase, smartphones become cheaper, internet costs get cheaper as well, and urbanization rates also continue to improve. There's just a significant, you know, flywheel effect that actually helps to drive the growth across the entire ecosystem. And, you know, that's definitely the trend that we're finding happening across quite a number of African countries so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that flywheel, and as you said, and it just gathers momentum. We'll leave that there. Ajisoji Shadukwe, he is Head of FinTech Banks Investment Banking Origination at Absa CIB. Appreciate the time.
Give you money, smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Rob Timmons. He's a Fed Group Chief Commercial Officer. Rob, appreciate the early morning time. Fed Group just got a 500 million rand funding round from the IDC, Industrial Development Corporation. This for your newly established Renewables Capital Fund. My sense, as a complete outsider, sounds like a big deal for both IDC and for Fed Group, and I imagine for renewables in South Africa as well. It's a good chunk of cash for the space.
Yes, thanks, Simon. Good morning. I think you're spot on there. I think raising sort of institutional capital in this alternative asset space is tricky, and getting to these ticket sizes is a lot of hard work. Fed Group's been doing this type of funding for around 10 years, specifically in the energy space. So it's not really news to us, but it's great to have a partner like the IDC along with us. And it really is our asset specialization and this experience that I speak to that sort of allows institutional funders to come in and co-fund with us in a public-private partnership.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, this is, as you say, it's not new for Fed Group. You've been in this space for some time. Is it fair to say, I mean, you're essentially managing the fund. IDC really is around that long-term debt funding and their ability to help in that regard.
Exactly. So as a catalyst funder, they can come in and allow us to actually grow our funds, so to use our capital to go and find projects, develop them out, to bring them down the risk curve, pull them together into portfolios, create SPVs like we've done for this one, specifically for the IDC, and actually accelerate deployment of capital into these specific areas. I mean, I guess that's the IDC's mandate quite clearly. And as a co-funder, that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for funders and people in the market that are able to do that for them, rather than trying to risk their capital. We use our experience and our specialists to make it easier for them to come into these types of projects, which are so desperately needed in this country for infrastructure investment.
And one of your key projects, Kocher Steel, just outside Gqeberha, your flagship asset. I mean, this really is providing solar for a steel billet manufacturer. Steel, hugely energy intensive, also fairly cyclical, but in a sense taking it and saying it doesn't need to be the dirty energy. We can almost make, this becomes green steel in a sense because of the solar energy.
Yeah, correct, 100%. I mean, Kocher Steel is a steel recycler. I think there's a lot to be said about the recycling of scrap metal and steel in this country, and yes, very, very energy intensive. The project so far, which is in its second phase, has enough energy to power over 1,500 homes. It's sort of 11,000 odd solar panels. It's a substantial amount of energy. It's definitely a large project, but it is a relatively small amount of their overall energy requirement for now. And we hope to look to the second or the third phase to substantially increase that power plant and take them further to green steel effectively.
Are we seeing a funding gap from banks? And I'm thinking sort of we see a lot of these days around a private credit, both locally and globally, sort of stepping into the picture as the more traditional banks, I suppose, step back in a sense. Are we seeing the same happening here locally?
Yes, for sure. We know globally private credit is one of the fastest growing asset classes. And locally, for sure, traditional lenders, they're retreating from sectors where there's a lot of specialized structuring required and a lot of long-term capital is needed. So this gap's evident definitely in renewable energy, but related infrastructure, as well as other industrial applications and agriculture. And our approach is really to fund these real economy assets. It generates long-term cash flows, and they sort of fit our mandate. It's like I said, we've been doing it for a while, and we know it works, and we know that understanding the underlying real assets gives you that predictability. It offers inflation protection. It's much less exposed to short-term market volatility, and I think if you have the expertise and the experience to structure these deals correctly, why not? There's an opportunity for private capital providers.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, it's fairly predictable and long-term cash flows. And that is absolutely the attraction of it. Leave it there. Rob Timmons, he's a Fed Group Chief Commercial Officer. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for the show today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukhle, Nicole Sabusa, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Evolution of modern retail.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.